Kiddush and Hagdolah, which are the positive commandments of the Torah itself, Kiddush for sure and Hagdolah questionably, as far as the mitzvah of Zohar. We quite finished all the laws of Kiddush and Hagdolah, which we'll try to finish them today. And the percentage I didn't cover, yes. Okay, thank you very much. Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Gadol Hador to the Torah itself, Kiddush for sure and Hagdolah questionably, as far as the mitzvah of Zohar. Quite finished all the laws of Kiddush and Hagdolah, which we'll try to finish them today. And the percentage I didn't cover, yes. Okay, thank you very much. Rav Moshe Feinstein was the Gadol Hador. He has many, many tshuvas. A tshuva is a responsa. Now, if you write that obvious things, you don't have to write a tshuva about it. When you write a tshuva, it means something just not obvious at all, which is usually controversial. And Rav Moshe has many controversial things which people dispute, not because they have less respect for Rav Moshe Lila, but you know, it's a matter of dispute. He said something which was new, and then I wouldn't accept some of his new opinions. One new opinion of Rav Moshe, which has not been accepted by others, is as follows. We had mentioned that a person is not supposed to eat before making Kiddush on Shabbos morning. Rav Moshe understands that on Shabbos morning a person is permitted to make Kiddush, eat something, let's say a piece of fish, and then make Kiddush a second time at home when you're about to have bread. Last week we said that was prohibited. The reason for the prohibition was the first Kiddush doesn't count, because A, Kiddush alav b'makom suda, not in the place we have in the meal has to be at least cake or even bread, and therefore since that Kiddush didn't count, you drank wine and or ate fish, for Kiddush is not allowed. Rav Moshe has a new interpretation. According to him, Ein Kiddush Alav Makom Suda just means they don't fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush unless you have a Suda too. However, if you make Kiddush without a Suda, this permits you to eat various foods which do not constitute a Suda, even though the Kiddush is not a perfect Kiddush. You have to make Kiddush again, but even his imperfect Kiddush suffices to permit the eating of fish, chopped liver, carrots, whatever things are not officially a halakhically a meal. This is what Rav Moshe said. Not everyone accepts this, but I was reminded, thank you very much, to mention it to you because it was omitted last week. Yes?
So you discuss whether or not you have to stand or sit
at various times. Very good. That's exactly. Everybody, I asked to remind you, better remind, I can't remember anything. The whole week. A lot of things happened since last week and this week. Yes, do you stand or sit for Kiddush? It depends upon your custom. There's no definitive halacha over here. Some of them are minute to stand, should stand. Some of them are minute to sit, should sit. I'm not going to go into the reasons why, the wherefores, because it's irrelevant completely. I'll tell you a story. Rav Soloveitchik, the Kohen Lavruch, has said a whole shiur once, an entire lengthy 2 or 3 hour shiur to explain the Yortzeit shiur to give, why it's preferred to sit Kiddush or Hagdolah, whichever one it was. And then a person was happened to be in Lavruch's house and found him standing. I don't understand. What are you doing? You give a whole shiur, you're supposed to sit down. You stood. Said, of course, my father stood. So forget about my whole shiur. I gave a whole shiur to explain the lumdus, why you're supposed to sit down. But my father stood, I'm standing. So it's the same story. It doesn't pay to spend time. You just that. Whatever is your custom, which now is your, whatever is your father's custom, you have to do your father's custom. First, the woman gets married, she adopts her husband's custom, which is probably taken from his father's custom. So here, it's not a matter of discussion. Just to tell you that usually if you're fulfilling the mitzvah with somebody else, whatever that person may be, a father, a husband, or any other individual, male or female, if you fulfill the mitzvah with that person, whatever that person does, you should do. If he or she is standing, you should stand. If he or she is sitting, you should sit. That's the bit. Okay? Ramesh is another unbelievable Kiddush concerning eating before Kiddush. This is really a whopper. We mentioned that a person is not supposed to eat before Kiddush. And we know that Friday night is not really a problem. Shabbos morning is often a problem. And this applies to a particular problem concerning women, because their status is a little bit unclear on a number of grounds. Number one, are women obligated to make Kiddush at all on Shabbos morning? We assume the answer is yes. It's not without controversy. Some say no. They're only obligated to make Kiddush Friday night. That's a din in Atar. Kiddush in the morning is only the rabbinical law, the Drabonim. But women are not obligated. That's Zman Gerama. Number two, there's a question of whether in fact there exists a prohibition against eating before Kiddush Shabbos morning. Some say there's no such prohibition in the first place. Now, we accept the stringent view of both of these disputes, but still, kind of svek-svek, there are two positions which might indicate that she may eat before Kiddush. Number three, Rav Moshe comes up with a whopper Kiddush, that a woman who is married is somehow meshubedet, she has an obligation to her husband to have Kiddush with him. Because it's passed with romance, right? He makes Kiddush and she should be having Kiddush with him. Shalom bayit. So therefore, she's permitted to eat Shabbos morning even before she made Kiddush, because she has to have Kiddush from her husband. So there's another God of the Torah, the Shrahaplu ben Chayim Lachayim, Rabbi Shloim Azam and Arba Shalita, whose words are often quoted in the same we're using, Shemir Shabbos Kilchasim. Quotes Rabbi Moshe, and he doesn't understand what he's talking about. What's so hard to make Kiddush twice? She said, let her make Kiddush in the morning by herself. Even her husband is not there. And then when her husband comes home from shul, she'll make sure to hear Kiddush again. It's so hard to eat so much on Shabbos. Doesn't understand what the problem is. I don't understand it either. So I don't understand it, frankly. But that's what Ramesh said. You put everything together, it's ground to be lenient in certain circumstances. As far as a woman, especially if she's married, eating before Kiddush. One, maybe there's no obligation in the first place. Two, maybe there's no prohibition in the first place, even before Kiddush in the morning. And three, if she's married, Rav Moshe is Kiddush. Now, here is where the unclear status emerges. Tosfos say, and I don't agree with the details, that if someone has to eat before davening Shacharis, let's talk about a man now for the moment. A man has to eat before davening Shacharis because he's so sick, you can't daven Shacharis without eating something first. You have to have cake, maybe bread. So then there's no obligation to make Kiddush. Why? Because the obligation to make Kiddush only begins, according to the Shulchan Aruch, after you daven Shacharis. After you daven Shacharis, then you have the obligation to eat, and then you have the obligation to make Kiddush. Before Shacharis, you're not really supposed to eat in the first place, and therefore, you're not supposed to eat in the first place, just that you're sick, you have to eat. So then there's no obligation to recite Kiddush. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Now, this is a matter of itself of some level of controversy. Let me explain. Yes?
You mean that if he was sick, that he would have to eat before
Shacharis? Eat before Shacharis and make Kiddush afterwards. That's what some poskim suggest. It's a controversy within itself. But listen carefully where it gets to the controversy to plot thickens. What about as far as a woman is concerned? Is a woman obligated to daven? That's not the subject of this class. I have some other class about that. That itself is a controversy. The Shulchan Aruch seems to say that a woman is not obligated to daven. She has to say a small amount. Some say bakasha. Some say bakasha probably has to do with the fact that women always said modahani in the morning, which is what we call the hodah. They said a bracha here and there, maybe ashirata or something like that, until it's dying, that's what we call a sheva. So the Magen Avraham said, you had a bakosha, some little tchina, some little request, you have sheva, bakosha, hodah, all three. And that, Torah is considered to be tefillah. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Mishnah Brura adopts in stricter positions. The women really should daven regular Shmoneh Esrei, Shachris, and Mincha. Yes?
Moshe
said that a woman who's single really shouldn't eat before Kiddush, because she's obligated to Kiddush. But a woman who's married, look, she has to eat, she's hungry, and to make Kiddush now, it's not right, she has to wait for her husband. So therefore there's a dispensation for her to eat before making Kiddush. So Aravach asks, what's the big deal? Make Kiddush now and make you hear Kiddush again? Doesn't understand what's going on over here. That's the controversy. Let's go back to this. So now if the woman accepts upon herself the opinion that she davens Shachris and Mincha every day, or at least Shachris every day, then she's the same as a man for all kinds of purposes. She's not supposed to eat before Shachris. She has to eat a little bit before Shachris, because after all, it's only a little bit, and she has a kind of a dispensation, etc. So then, maybe she wouldn't have to make Kiddush, because for her, Kiddush starts only after Shachris, the same as for a man. However, if the woman doesn't always daven Shachris, and assuming that she relies on the Shulchan Aruch, or even the Mishnah Brura, by the way, the Mishnah Brura said a woman is required to daven Shachris every day, well, Mrs. Mishnah Brura never did. The son wrote a biography that his mother never davened Shachris as long as, I shouldn't say never, as long as the children were young, she never davened Shachris, because her husband, Mishnah Brura, the whole time said she's exempt, taking care of her family. And it kind of makes it worse. She's not going to daven Shachris, and maybe she's a responsibility and obligation to make Kiddush as soon as she wakes up in the morning. It gets very complicated, because all these controversies merge into one. It's really difficult to get to a bottom line. It is not so simple. I saw a very remarkable psak here in the Shmir Shabbos, quoted from the Kaf HaChaim. Kaf HaChaim was a very significant Sfaradi post. These psakim apply to Ashkenazi too. When they make sense for us, we should have to accept them also. That the woman does not plan to fulfill the mitzvah by this little bakasha in the morning, with those few little words, she plans to daven the full Shachris. Then she's permitted to eat something before she davens Shachris, because after all, the obligation only sets in when it comes to Shachris. Same as by a man. Of course, it gets very complicated, because if she didn't fulfill the mitzvah, then how could she eat before Shachris in the first place? She'd be the same as a man, she's not supposed to eat before Shachris. You'll tell me that she's too weak. That's a very limited dispensation. You're probably aware of the fact that many people, men and women, eat before davening Shachris. It's unfortunate, because the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not supposed to eat before Shachris unless you're sick. Sick means you're so sick, you're so weak, and you cannot daven before eating first. Most people eat before Shachris. That's not the case. They can certainly daven without eating. But they want to daven, and the minyan doesn't start until 2 hours from now, and it stops for 3 hours. Won't be open until 12 o'clock. By that time, they're plotting. So they already eat something at 7:30 in the morning. What they should do instead, though, the Shulchan Aruch says, it's clear, the brewer, they should better daven b'yechidus, even though we're a very big fan of davening b'tibur. But they should better daven b'yechidus. We're talking about a man. They should daven b'yechidus at 7:30 in the morning. Just Shachris. Then make Kiddush. We're only talking about a Shabbos or Yom Tov. Make Kiddush. And I go to shul, and they're laning and musaf, etc., etc. In certain German communities, it's very widespread, this custom. For those of a weak constitution, cannot take it till the end, till davening is actually over. So then the question becomes, there really isn't much of a right to eat before davening. It's unfortunate that there are many, many Jews who eat before davening. But how do you reconcile, how do you justify it? It's hard to say. So they say, well, you're too sick. This, that, I don't buy into that whole system. What, who's so sick? You can't daven the Shmoneh Esrei. It's 5 minutes, and then afterwards you can eat. Weekday or Shabbos. So I have a different theory. So the people who eat before davening, when they realize it or not, are relying on it to get a different view, which says that the entire prohibition to eat before Shabbos is because you may forget. Most authorities disagree. Most authorities maintain the prohibition of eating against before Shabbos is an intrinsic prohibition. Intrinsic, absolute prohibition. Even if you have 10 reminders, it doesn't make a difference. something called the possible soft law. Adam, the Gemara says you should not supposed to eat before you daven for your life. But there is a minority of you which said, and this quarter is one opinion in Shulchan Aruch, that if a person started eating before dawn, they can keep right on eating. How do you justify that? By saying, it's only a question of forgetfulness. So the people think, well, I'm not going to forget. I daven with a minyan every single day. I'm never going to forget. I have a certain pattern, etc. That's what I think the basis is. If that's the case, that's the basis for it, then it seems to me it's not based on strength, it's not based on weakness. And therefore, really, if that's the case, there should be an obligation to make Kiddush earlier. Because there's a person that thinks it's permissible to eat before Shacharis. No one does it, no one listens. They just eat their cake, you know, by certain communities. Before Shacharis, coffee, cake, especially on Shabbos, even during the week sometimes. I don't think it's a right thing to do. I think that they should really, if necessary, not be Chidus. No one likes to do that. Let's find an earlier minion. That's probably the best thing. Find an earlier minion, which ends, and then you can come back at a decent, unless you're really weak. If you're weak, you should not be a chidus, in my opinion. As far as women are concerned, it's a little more complicated. The Kappa Chaim said they can stay a little bakosha, and then they can eat, and they're not going to fulfill the mitzvah until they daven, and then they make kiddush afterwards. And then how they eat in the first place before davening? Well, women, so they accept upon themselves the requirement for davening, if not all week, at least Shabbos, perhaps, the whole discussion of Shemir Shabbos about that too. But as far as the prohibition of eating before davening, with respect to that, they rely on the other opinion. It's kind of a contradiction in how they rely, but that's the way they try to walk a tightrope to justify this custom. Many, if not most, women have a custom of eating before davening Shabbos morning, going to shul. They don't like to make kiddush by themselves early in the morning. But the truth to tell, if there's nothing which stops them, they really should make kiddush. The great truth is to make kiddush.
Don't stop.
Should daven shacharis, make kiddush, have a piece of cake, and go to shul. That's the ideal for men and for women. For those who aren't able to wait till afterwards. I said a lot of different things, made it a little complicated. I hear all your questions. Yes?
Can you
say about eating before that? During the week, you could probably eat before
that. What about
the shabbat? Some say yes, but most say no.
So you have to eat before you start breakfast?
Well, again, for women, some say that if they're not obligated to daven, and they can rely upon this deep breakfast. So they have a different status. Okay? Yes?
If you're
in a mode where you're guaranteed not to forget, you set your alarm watch, you point these ties, 10 strings around your fingers, so you're in a pattern that you don't forget, you have someone to remind you. So then that's,
you won't forget to
stop. Right. If you will make sure you won't forget, sorry, I thought that was understood. Went a little too fast. Yes? Very good, very good. There's definitely an Indian that you want to ask also. You're not supposed to fast on Shabbos. Now, what constitutes a fast? Chatzos. If you're talking about daylight savings time, which is the majority of the year here in New York, usually okay. Earliest that is chatzos and daylight savings is 20 to 1. Some shuls can even go past that, believe it or not, but most shuls can get back before 20 to 1 to now. That's what it is right now, 20 to 1. That's exactly what Chatos is now. 12:40, 12:41, 12:39, you know, that range. But just wait 10 days, and they move the clock. Boom. What used to be called 20 to 1 is now what? 20 to 12. Oh, that's a different story already. 20 to 12. Huh. Most shuls are still going. Any shuls are still going. That's a serious problem. You're not supposed to fast beyond chatzos. So now what do you do? Big problem. Major issue. What do you do? So the truth is, you say, okay, look, I can't help it. I'm in a difficult situation. I, especially the woman, can say, I'll rely on the more lenient view. Namely, get up in the morning and I'll say Moda Ani and I'll say Baraka, whatever, I'll do Sadayan, I'll go make a little Makosha, whatever you say, the most Moda Ram says, and then I'll eat something and I'll make Kiddush later. You could say that, this is the Kaf HaChaim apparently permits it, is what the grounds for it. However, this is another problem. It's a completely different problem, which most posts just don't ignore for some reason. And it is as follows. According to the simple reading of the Rambam, according to the Orach HaShulchan, a person is supposed to fulfill three Shabbos meals. We started talking about that a little bit last week. Three Shabbos meals. Friday night is the first meal. Shabbos morning is the second meal. Shabbos afternoon is the third meal, what we call Shalosh Shudas. Therefore, according to this understanding, it's a requirement to have the second Shabbos meal on Shabbos morning, which means morning is going to be before Chatzos. How do you define the Shabbos meal? Of course, the meal says the Shabbos meal means to wash. So therefore, it's certainly preferred for a person to wash before Chatzos. Now you're already in real trouble. Then if you're going to make Kiddush in Shul at 11:30, you know, three weeks from now, until you get home and wash, it's going to be way after the time. I only have one suggestion for you. Change shuls. So find a minyan which happens early. I invite you to come to Yom Kippur at Riverdale. We try very hard to finish at a decent hour, so that we should be able to get out, those who are interested in doing this, which is the preferred way of doing things, to be able to get home in time to wash, actually, before midday. If a person cannot do that, though, there is a possibility that one can fulfill even this requirement of the Rambam and the Aruch HaShulchan in the following very interesting way. Shulchan Aruch says that these three meals should ideally all consist of bread, challah, matzah. But when it comes to Shalosh Shudas, there are those who maintain that you don't have to eat so much. It's enough to have, if not bread, cake. If not cake, some even say fish or meat. Not that, some even say fruits or vegetables. It's descending order of priority. Now, at first glance, Shulchan Aruch means either you accept these leniencies, the Friday night has to be bread, Shabbos morning has to be bread, Shabbos afternoon can be meat, fish, vegetables, whatever it may be, cake. However, Rav Chaim Brisker is quoted as saying that this order is not necessarily indispensable. Let me explain to you the logic of this opinion, and then we'll get to Rav Chaim said. Why should it be that one meal can be only cake or fruits or vegetables or meat or fish? Why? If you have two meals have to be bread, you should have to have all three meals of bread. The answer is false. We have meals on Shabbos for two separate and distinct reasons. One is what we call Oneg Shabbos. I have another expression, Oneg Shabbos. Shabbos is only Yom Tov, we assume. And that is fulfilled by having challah or matzah both at night and by day. That's the myth of Oneg. That's why on Yom Tov, that's all that's required. Two sudas. Suda the night of Yom Tov, and suda the day of Yom Tov. The entire requirement for what we call Shalosh Shudas is based upon a pasuk. Practice of Shalosh, the conjunction with the Man. I believe you mentioned this last week in some slightly different context about covering the challah. I believe you mentioned this, am I right? There's Hayom three times, right? I didn't mention this pasuk last week? I don't forget everything. Now the word Hayom is mentioned three times, and that's why you have to have a third suda. Now, according to some, the sudas from the perspective of Hayom don't have to be so rigorous. Maybe it's enough to have cake, maybe fish, maybe fruits. Therefore, you have to have a suda at night, and a suda by day, and you have to have another third suda for the Hayom. Many poskim say that third suda must also be bread. That's how it's preferred to follow. But some say the third suda can even be cake, and some even fish, and some even fruits. So Rav Chaim is quoted as saying, wait a minute. If you accept the lenient view, namely, the third suda could be cake, so why only the third suda? The second suda could also be cake. Why must it be bread, cake? Why can't it be bread, cake, bread? According to logic, it should be the same thing. couldn't get a right, argue with that point, but that's what Reb Chaim is quoted as saying. That's the case. A person who's in shul, Shabbos mornings, and they have a kiddush in shul, let's say, and they have, you have cake. Remember last week, you have to have, at least a kazayas cake. Cookie, something, lakshuk kugel, something which has a bizarre kind. Then, if you do that before chatzos, the shul ends, you know, 11 something, you have that in shul, you go home at 12:30, you eat a meal, so then perhaps you're not in violation of this Rambam. You're supposed to have one meal before chatzos, one meal after chatzos. Why? Because the first meal was the cake, and the second meal is the bread. Why did Reb Chaim say this? I'll be looking at it. Because there were many Jews in Europe who unfortunately didn't have shalashus. Terrible thing, not to eat shalashus. Terrible. It was an absolute requirement, shalashus. Reb Chaim was trying to find some justification for their practice. So Reb Chaim said, you know, customers in Europe, they used to have kiddush and shul or at home. No. Lakshon kugel, okay. Then afterward, after the afternoon, 12 o'clock or whatever it was, they would have a meal. So Chaim said, maybe they fulfill shalashus. They had a meal Friday night. They had cake Shabbos morning. And then they had a bread Shabbos afternoon. You just turn the order around. So if that's the case, A, they can fulfill shalashus in this fashion according to this. And B, they can fulfill the mitzvah of having the meal before noon. So this is what Reb Chaim is quoted as saying. Not everyone agrees with this. Shulchan Aruch does not seem to agree, but still we justify this custom for those who have it. The ideal thing is to get to a shul which gets you home in time to wash your chatzos. I tell you now it's not a problem, but starting in November, it is a problem in many shuls. It's as early as 20 to 12, but it's very early in New York. Because you live in a different city, it makes it easy. You live in Atlanta, Detroit, these cities are much further west in the same time zone. It's much, makes life easier in this respect. It's a bit harder in most of Shabbos, In summer, it's 10 o'clock, it's trade-offs. Okay? Any questions? Yes.
Like
davening,
like coffee, even on a regular day, is that equal
to
eating?
The question, will a person permitted to drink before davening? The Mishnah Berurah says that a person can't function without drinking coffee in the morning, it's permissible. That person is literally sick. The people who are caffeine addicted, before they drink their coffee, they cannot function. You can't, well, why don't you daven shemesh first, then have your coffee? No, they can't daven shemesh without the caffeine rush. They can't function. It's literally an addiction. And I'm not in favor of addiction. We're opposed to addiction in this university. But it's a legal addiction. But it has all kinds of effects. As a matter of fact, if you want to read about caffeine addiction, I recommend article by Rabbi Lamb, which has appeared in the Journal of Medicine, or what they call JAMA, the American Medical Association Journal. Oh, it was back 15 years, I think, this article. Maybe more, 20 years. It's an old article. What happened? Rabbi Lamb used to have terrible, terrible problems in Yom Kippur. Terrible headaches. He didn't know what came from. Absolutely horrendous headaches. Couldn't figure out what it was. He finally figured out what it was. It was caffeine withdrawal symptoms. He was a heavy coffee drinker. And all of a sudden, he went that hour without coffee. So he didn't fast, but the caffeine, he couldn't live without it. So he's a whole recommendation how you don't go start going cold turkey and going down from, I don't know, 8 cups of coffee a day to none. So you wean yourself away from it. Now, Sarah Simei Chub, you go down 1 cup a day. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then you get off the habit. I recommend you get off the habit, period. You don't have to go back after Yom Kippur. There's no, you have to keep late hours, you can't sleep, that's a problem. But I really think it's better you do without. I'll just tell you another story. Story must go back at least 10 years. I was telling this over in my shul. It's an article, I can't produce the article, it should really get in. And if you ask me, caffeine is not so healthy. And you're better off doing without this addiction completely. So I spoke about it, and often the rabbi speaks to Balabatan like he thinks he's talking to the... talks, you never know, but I didn't expect anyone to take too much note of it. 6 months later, we invited a couple to the Seder. If I know how long it was, 6 months later to the Seder. And after we finished the main dish, my wife asked them, would you like coffee? Tea or coffee? You know, please. Coffee. The rabbi said, you're not supposed to drink coffee. I stopped drinking coffee 6 months ago. Couldn't believe it. We had to be 6 months. That unfortunately, there's been a regression. But at least for 6 months, he didn't drink coffee. That's a guru. So that's permissible, because as long as you're still addicted, so you can't dabble without it. You're really cold. However, aside from that, just a little thirsty in the morning, the Shulchan Aruch permits water. Hard to argue with Shulchan Aruch. I think the Rambam doesn't even allow water either, in my opinion. But all right, Shulchan Aruch says water is okay. But milk, tea, orange juice, and this stuff, we all do have to have it. I can understand that you really absolutely must. It's better, especially for men. Women, again, have a different status, and it's not clear whether this permission applies in the first place. But as far as men is concerned, I would say it's certainly better to daven before you drink any. Yes. I was taking a pill with water. First of all, taking a pill with water. It's a very interesting halakha question. Not for now. Do you make a shahakal or not? If you only take the pill to drink to get the water to get the pill down, you don't make a bracha.
Well, if you didn't eat anything or drink anything that day, you're also enjoying the water.
You have a problem about the water. What do you do about it? So the best thing to do is only take a little bit of water to get the pill down. The really best thing to do is to take the pill with no water. Now you may find out the problem. I always tell people they should get used to having pills without water. Not always, at least sometimes. Because you never know, if you take a pill on Yom Kippur, that's a big thing, it's complicated. If you take it without water, it's alright. So I have to take a pill, I usually take it without water just to show people around me that it can be done. I can't do it. Can do it. Yes? I'm sure I will have a kavanah because you're too hungry. Very serious question. If a person absolutely can't have kavana, then maybe there's a dispensation to eat or drink. But I think that if you get, as soon as you wake up in the morning, the first thing you're going to want, you just, you know, as soon as you get dressed, wash up, you have your daven shmonesri first thing, whatever else daven is leading up to that, actually before the hunger pangs have a chance to set in. So you wake up with a terrible lot of pangs of hunger. Makes it a diet or something of that nature. So I don't know. If you're on a diet, you're better off than suffering the hunger pangs. Yes? For sure, an exception to the rule. You're permitted, even encouraged, not to eat until after Chatzos. Give you into all that.
Yeah, we don't feel so.
Again, if you have a hard time, for that, you should have had a kiddush in the shul and have it before you go walk for an hour. Not so usual. But better again. Those who have to eat before, I don't make a whole federal case out of this, but that's what I think is preferred. Okay? Yes.
If you drink water, if you hold the shofar, is that considered that, like on Shabbos, is that considered that you haven't fasted, that you broke this whole
idea? You drink water, and you enjoy the water, so it's considered a thirst quencher, so you're drinking it for your pleasure, not just for halachic reasons. You make a shakal, and the bar of the and you broke your fast. Not a problem. It's not another problem she's talking about.
Right.
So it's talking about. Not about the meal before itself. That's still a problem. At least the fast you took care of. Right. If the yontif, it takes care of the whole problem. Because there's no requirement of a meal of shulchan aruch because it's only one meal in the whole day. So I used to, when I was younger, I used to drink water on Rosh Hashanah before davening in order to break the fast. Right? Because I was wondering about this business. And later I realized two things. One, drinking water before Shabbat is not so simple. But number two, maybe you should fast. I mean, Shulchan, but that's simple for Rosh Hashanah. It's Kiddush now. All right, we got too far afield here. What can happen? Okay. So, are there any outstanding questions concerning Kiddush? think we made basically covered most of the major topics in Kiddush, but maybe I left something out which occurs to you, which slips my mind right now. Anybody? Okay, we'll consider Kiddush done. Now, yes.
When you read Kiddush,
there's etiquette to sit down and drink the wine. However, many people, when they're around the table and just sipping a little bit of wine, they have a custom. If they were standing for the Kiddush itself, they drink while they're standing. It's hard to really come out against that. It's very prevalent today. Presumably, the person himself is making the Kiddush, if he's around the table, he's drinking, you know, a lot of the wine, it'd be better for him to sit down. You often have a case where you make a Kiddush in the shul, everyone's doing on those seats. Everyone's standing up. Then, more prevalent to actually make a drink of Kiddush, drink from the wine and stand up. But if all things being equal, it's better to sit down. Alright. Hi, Abdullah. A little bit about Abdullah already. Abdullah is after Shabbos. When is Shabbos over? That's the problem. There exists a mitzvah called Tosefes Shabbos. It's supposed to add on Shabbos at the beginning, add on to Shabbos at the end. How much? Well, there's no specific amount of time. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a certain amount. Above and beyond the time of actual doubt that maybe it's really Shabbos. So Friday night, we know when Shabbos enters. We assume Shabbos enters when the sun sets beneath the horizon. Printed in the New York Times and all the charts. That's when Shabbos enters. So there was a requirement to cease and desist from doing any malacha before that. Some say it's even a requirement to accept Shabbos verbally. I don't believe that that's the case. Or Mishnah Berurah seems to say so. I don't think it's really true for the most authorities. But to stop doing malachas is a requirement. In the custom, which we'll get to later, to discuss candle lighting, light 18 minutes before sunset, but that's not really mandatory. Better to do it, of course, but you can go a little bit later. How much later? 5 minutes. 10 minutes. You should try to at least the last 5 or 10 minutes before the sun sets not to do any malacha. There's a question: if a person accepted upon himself or herself Shabbos, can you have a minhag after that? That's not so simple. So for that reason, maybe it's better not to make a formal acceptance of Shabbos. You have to light candles. Usually, see, I'm going ahead of myself. Especially for the woman is concerned. Lighting candles is to make a bracha. On the initial Shabbos is tantamount to acceptance of Shabbos. So then they say you should make a condition. You have a davar mincha, make a condition, you're not accepting Shabbos yet, so you can davar mincha. That's what's quoted in the post. That's as far as before Shabbos. After Shabbos is the subject of a very major dispute. When does the day end? Not limited to Shabbos, it applies across the board. When does the day end? So, what dispute? Three stars at the end. Everyone knows that. Well, when are the three stars? It's also a dispute. I can't give you all the intricacies now. Suffice it to say that there are numerous opinions. Some say that the stars are seen in Yerushalayim, springtime, as little as 13 and a half or 15 minutes after the sun sets. You may have noticed in Yerushalayim it gets dark more quickly than in New York. You ever notice that? It's much less twilight than we call Ben HaShemosh. Others say it has to be longer than that. In 2 minutes. Plus it gets longer in the summer. It also gets longer in New York. New York is further north than the Yerushalayim. Extrapolate. What does that extrapolation come to? So, the shorter time extrapolates the sum of it. Let's talk about the sum of it. That's the longest amount of time. So something like 28 minutes approximately. And the longer time till about 34 minutes. You'll get an approximation. So therefore, it would seem that the three stars are out for sure 35 minutes after the sun sets. And therefore, for all laws which the Torah requires, it's sufficient to wait, strictly speaking, 35 minutes. The exception is Shabbos. The Shabbos requires what we call tosefes, additional time. They didn't have clocks in those days, so the way they defined it was, instead of seeing three stars scattered, I can see three stars of what they called Ritzufim. They should be near each other. You know, when you look, oh, there's a star, you know, all over the place. That's good for everything else. But for Shabbos, you have three stars clustered. That takes much longer. So therefore, it seems to me that the ideal time to wait, so Shabbos is out, if you want to make sure the three clustered stars, is an hour. An hour. If, however, that's too long an hour, so then I can, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a shear, 50 minutes. 50. But less than that, it's very difficult to permit someone to do malacha after Shabbos. You may know, though, that the Rabbeinu Tam's mouth, they've heard about this, you hear Rabbeinu Tam? Known as 72 minutes. That's not so simple, the 72 minutes. The 72 is likely what the Zman is in Yerushalayim in the springtime. You have to extrapolate the summer, extrapolate in New York, you'll end up with 100 minutes, something like that. And then there are those who say it's not 72, it's really 90 in Yerushalayim. That extrapolates in New York in the summer to 144 minutes. That means that in June, you can't make Abdullah till 11 o'clock. That's late. Yes, I have a question.
Yeah, so all the standardized blocks that we get in the mail, they come to the machine, and they are still put down according
to each one according to a different opinion.
But they all seem to be within like a minute or two, between each other.
Oh, really? Well, many calendars always have, for some reason, have chosen to declare that Shabbos ends an hour after the Lichtmesh. Which is, of course, approximately 42 minutes after the sunset. 40. I have no quibble with that, because you see, in my opinion, 35 minutes suffices as far as the actual requirement for Shabbos. And I guess these people feel that 5 minutes of extra, you can already have the requisite amount of what we call Tosefta Shabbos. So I'm not coming to fight with any calendars. However, I still think it's better we wait the extra 10 minutes or so beyond that, 8 or 10 minutes beyond that. That's what Moshe said. I really think it's better to wait for an hour, not an hour after Lich Bench, but it's better to wait an hour after Shkia, after the sunset, then you know, I'm pretty sure that it's already, Shabbos is out with the winter Tosefta. Those who follow the Rabbeinu Tam, so very nice, they extend Shabbos even longer. I can't, in all honesty, expect people to do that, because it probably takes you a couple hours after Shabbos, and it does not seem to be the generally accepted practice here in our community. Chassidim is that way. Certainly Shivas that's that way. But they went only 72 minutes across the board. It's a little questionable. It really should be longer in these parts of town and the south. I don't know. Just mention that to you. So if we came to Abdullah should take place at a later time because we light a candle at Abdullah. First thing to do is light a candle. How do you light the candle before Abdullah? Wait a second. You're going around in circles. How do you light a candle before Abdullah? You can't. It's going around forever. So there is a different kind of Abdullah. There's Abdullah, what we call on a cup of wine. And there's also Abdullah in Davni. We mentioned last week a little bit. We were discussing. What's Abdullah Davni? Atachon Anton. What about someone who doesn't Davni Ma'ariv, or hasn't Davni Ma'ariv yet, but not Davni Ma'ariv at all? Women are considered to be exempt from Ma'ariv. It's a shus, they never accepted it, the whole story. Well, there's a very simple formula. It's called Baruch Amav Levin Kodesh Lachol. Anyone know Yiddish over here? God's Ben Avram was the traditional way of saying this. A very beautiful little tefillah. It has its own intrinsic value. Forget about everything else. The Hail of the Shabbos, get that, remember, whatever it is. But if you want to save time, right? In the modern age, you know, everything goes fast. We have microwaves, we have everything goes fast. So now, after Baruch HaMazel B'Kosh L'Chol, in 5 words, take care of the whole story. That should be done before you do Baruch. Let's say, for example, you want to wash the dishes, and you want to clean the house, you want to put on the water dishwasher and the lights, and then your father, your husband, I don't know for sure yet. So now, after the sun sets, within the papers, you can say Baruch HaMazel B'Kosh L'Chol, and start doing all the work you have to do, and shut. Really pressing, you can do it already 50 minutes after the sunset. It's an emergency. It's absolute emergency. I don't know what qualifies for that. Maybe even this the time you see in your calendar. I don't like that part too much. If someone has an absolutely pressing need, perhaps it's a basis. And again, I'm not too excited about those times. Yes? No, you can have them out earlier. For example, in our shul, we daven Maariv around 45 minutes after the sun sets. So we finish about an hour after the sun sets, and that's what we like. That's what we thought of. No, it's not that much early. Yes?
So does that mean that if you're very machmir, then on certain occasions you can't eat till after 11 o'clock? That's usually you can't eat until after Mazel? Can you eat anything?
Drink water. Well, I thought I'd
have a shalashudas again.
Well, you can expand your shalashudas as long as you want. Says in Shalashuddin, you're not supposed to eat before Abdul, but if you start in Shalashuddin before sunset, you can extend it like Chassidim. They have a tish, they go for hours and hours and hours. If you're hungry, you can go till 11 o'clock and then take a break for Maariv and Abdul. You would say, something you can't eat anymore because you're ready to go Hamad when the Shabbos is over. That's a complicated story. So let's try to stay away from it. I'm probably not going into more detail, but it usually doesn't happen. I'm not going to go into this. Okay. Yes?
So I don't understand. The shul calendar is going to be monthly, the farce. Farce.
But I imagine that they're of the view that a person can be more lenient and take out the Shabbos, let's say, 40 minutes. This Abdullah is very straightforward. We spoke about it last week, that there's a question whether women are obligated to Abdullah or not, and therefore, it's better if a woman is Abdullah for a man. If she cannot, she should make Abdullah for herself. Abdullah obligation is merely Borei Pri HaGofen and Hamavla Ben Kodesh L'Chol, etc. The other things, some of them and there, are not absolute requirements. So Rishus, a good idea, you should very customary to do it. It's Abdullah. Abdullah is very straightforward. We spoke about it last week that there's a question whether the women are obligated to Abdullah or not. And therefore, it's better to the woman is Abdullah for a man. If she cannot, she should make Abdullah for herself. Abdullah obligation is merely Bore for Agafen and Hamavla make Kodesh Lachol, etc. The other things, Summim and there, are not absolute requirements. So Rishus, a good idea, it's very customary to do it, it's not an absolute requirement. Okay. There is an interesting matter concerning the a person who has no Abdullah, no warrant for Abdullah. What do you do then? So we mentioned Khamar Medina. Remember that? There's no wine in town. You can perhaps use other beverages. There's wine in town, you just don't have any. It's a problem. Also say you should maybe fast that night. One of the Amoroyim is fasted. Want to shop, he's waiting to get the wine the next day. Ah, what happened to Malava Malka? Yeah, so Malava Malka is something that's important, but it's not as important as eating before Abdullah. So try to avoid the situation by getting grape juice, we said. Well, not that. Maybe we can rely upon certain other drinks, but I guess for the last week, I don't like that too much either. So we do have wine in our city. Yes? I never heard of that. Okay. Is it a question of whether the woman can volunteer, quote unquote, to make a bracha on the nair? Some may say it's not drama, some say it's not. It's a question of what kind of of bracha it is. It says it in the siddur, it's hard for me to argue with the siddur. The siddur says no, well, what am I much going to say? It's a subject of dispute. Leave it at that. But if someone has a custom, do it, do it. Not to do it, not to do it. I can't give you a definitive answer on that one. Yes?
I know that most shuls usually you say mincha first, then they have shal shudas in the middle, and then marav. Is there any way, is there a requirement to wait till after mincha in order to have shal shudas?
Some say shal shudas should be done after mincha, some say should be done before mincha.
So
whatever you
really
do is
matter.
Good. Whatever you do is good. This idea of besamim, you have to be able to smell the besamim. Besamim is so old, you can't, or cold, you can't smell it. The besamim is not really a mitzvah, it's a birchas hanan, not shahakal. So therefore, you have to make sure that you're able to smell it. Nair, it's a big question what it is. What is this nair, bro? See a nair all the time, like a bro, what's going on over here? Some say it's a birchas hasheva, some say it's a birchas hananim. The difference would be, should you get the custom of putting our hands up near the candle. It's a birchas hananim, you should first say the bracha, then put your hands up. It's a birchas hasheva, you should first put your hands up, and then say the bracha. Some say you should put your hands up before the bracha, and then continue to put your hands up after the bracha. It should be both. That's the ideal way of doing it. To keep your hand up before the bracha, say the bracha, and then look again after the bracha. So you have both. Big problem with the nair. There's so much light outside. You have some 500 watt bulbs on top. What kind of nair? Some say it's preferred to extinguish the electrical lights in the room. And others say no. And the truth of the matter is, it's not so simple, because in the olden days, the nair really meant something. The nair was meant to illuminate the room. Today, we don't use a nair to illuminate the room. We have enough light without that. So it's called the Kovod B'Alma. It's purely for the purpose of honoring the Abdullah. Some say, if it's Kovod B'Alma, the Gemara says you shouldn't make a bracha on it. How do we ever make a bracha on there? On there is not for illumination purposes. Even if you have the truth, even if you turn off the light, I mean, who are you fooling? Come on, we know it is, we don't need this building. You have a much bigger line on top. So I don't know, you have to say that the minig is that it's meant for Abdullah, so we can make a broker anyway. That being the case, one can suggest that even if the electric lights are on, you don't gain much from this. Maybe it's still permissible. Maybe. That justifies the minhag of most places. They don't turn the lights off. Turn the lights off, it's just a little bit better. Yes? Oh. Adam Arishan was the first Boy Scout. He made the first fire on Motzei Shabbos. That's why we have the Yer Shel Havdol. And he's supposed to be close enough to enjoy the light. But to demonstrate that you enjoy the light, you look over here and you see the difference between the color of your skin and the color of the fingernails. There's also kind of Kabbalistic connotations, which I'm not going to go into. So that's what it's about. Yes?
In short, you have dollar
as well. You fulfill the mitzvah of dollar? Definitely. No need to smell the tamim or the nair. The whole nair and the whole tamim is not really mandatory. Not, you can live without it. Yes?
If you can't smell the
sun,
is it better not to use it?
Use it if you can't smell it. If
it's
a bad cold.
Someone else?
Skip someone else and someone else. Fine. The question, interesting question, can I make a sum for somebody else? Usually we have a rule, I cannot make a birchah for them. We discussed it last week. Kiddush is an exception. Abdullah is an exception. What about the summer part of Abdullah? So that's also an issue. The guy is making Abdullah as a cold, then it's a relevant question. But they're hoping they're going to be healthy, so that's a relevant question. Yes?
Can you make the bracha on the nair on the mic?
Absolutely not. Not permitted to make a bori, ma'ori, or aish on light. This light for sure not, it's arrested. Even incandescent light is usually frosted. You can't see the actual glowing filament. And even if it's a glowing filament, it's still a major question. It's not frosted. Because it's not really, first there's a glass bulb around it. And they say Rav Chaim Oizer was one of the Gedolei Yisrael from Vilna before the war. He made Havdalah on an electric light. So first it was must have been an incandescent, not frosted light that in Vilna in the 30s and 20s. And secondly, he did it for a specific reason. He wanted to demonstrate that putting on electric lights on Shabbos is absolutely prohibited. So those who said, well, that's electric, in order to demonstrate it was prohibited, he used to make a user for Abdullah, just to show, just to make a point. Nowadays, I think the points were made already, so we go back to the candles. The truth is, you know, I told you even the candle itself is questionable, because we don't need the candles anymore. So, I guess your interesting point could be made. It's better to make a Borah Moresh on the light, instead of on the Abdullah candle. But that would require unfrosted incandescent bulb, A, and B, even that would be a question, because the glass intervenes between the fire and the candles. The Shulchan Aruch, it says, if you have a glass, I think it's called Zechuchis, or Ashoshis, between the filament and the person, it's a problem. I'll read it to you. Air v'sochek or v'soch panas. Panas is called a flashlight. Right? So, over to aspaklaria. Right? So you can see the light. Nevertheless, it's no good. It's no good. Aim the baruch and aleph. This whole discussion of being in Bir Alok or Mishnah Brewer or whatever, it's a chukis. What is chukis? I don't know. You make a good point though, because the Havdalah candle is also a problem. I don't know which is better, which is worse. One could also suggest that their glass wasn't as clear as ours. Their glass was probably more frosted light. They didn't have the ability to make very clear glass. That's disgusting. Different Zika's Hummets, we have different kind of glass as they have. I don't know, but it's a good question. Yes? Just to look at your nails and fingers, by the light of the adlock of the Abdullah. Okay. So in order to demonstrate that you see the advantage of the light, to dispute whether you should make a bracha and then put your hand up, or put your hand up and then make a bracha, doesn't really matter, strictly speaking, but you fulfill both views, so some put their hands up, make the bracha, leave the hands for a little another second, a few seconds. Yes?
In concerns of the light, isn't there a concept that if you don't have a light, you could also do that if you're close?
Absolutely would not apply, because the Friday night is enough to have what we call a nair, which is anything. Where as on Shabbos, you have to have what we call Borimir Ori Ha'esh, as an actual fire. So you cannot compare necessarily the Nair with the Esh. If it's something that might qualify the Nair, might qualify the Esh. Aside from the fact that the glass intervening, certainly is a potential problem for Abdullah. It may not be a problem at all as far as kid, you know, Friday night is concerned. Okay, yes?
In regards to the salmon, what do you use for that?
The custom is usually called Borei Mine B'Samen. Starting to use Atzei or Yisrei, we try to do Mine, which is what they use, clothes, and things of the same.
So, could you use perfume?
Absolutely not. You have to use something which is as a physical substance, not the.
Like a leaf? Can you use a leaf that smells?
Maybe? Leaf? Could be. It has a natural smell. Hadassim are leaves. That's a custom that's a certain Sephardic community. Yes? I forgot the food. So you're not supposed to even use food for a farm and stuff.
Spices.
No, but it's meant for food, no? You buy the food. Cloves that we buy, although maybe some people use it for food, we are what we call miyachin, and we designate it exclusively for smell. Never had that status. Live without it. You don't need it. You don't need it at all. Yes? I don't know. Something which is used primarily as a food is a very major question. Whether that really requires a bracha for me to be sung. Not so simple. Yes? That's the point. It's Atei and it's Yisvei. It's an almost universally accepted custom to make always Mine B'Samen on Rosh Hashanah. And the reason is because they confuse things. Is it Atei? Is it Yisvei? Is it Mine? So Mine B'Samen is like the shahakol of some. It takes care of everything. So the custom is to make it on a Mine no matter what. In order to make it a proper custom, it's better to get a kind of a spice or other fragrant article which requires Mine in the first place. So it shouldn't just work as a sort of a catch-all, but it should be working in the ideal sense. Okay? Yes? Whenever you smell something which requires, which has a good smell, you should make a broken either Mine or Atzei or Isbeh. Since if you don't know what it is, you make Mine. Unless it's Shabbos, we always make Mine. So you try to find what really is Mine. But if the food smells good, you don't make a broth. I could say, bake a cake, right? Delicious smell of the cake. You don't make a broth. Different broth are complicated, but you wouldn't make a bar in summer on cake. Okay. Fine. Yes? Well, if it's obvious to you that you're going to get a hold of the summon, it's a matter of time, they pass 1, 2, 3, 8, 10, 20, but you know for sure it's going to come to you, then you don't have to make a new broker. But if you're not sure it's going to come to you, and ultimately it does come to you, then you have to make your own broker of summon. And if it's a problem running into the next broker, so then, you know, just forget about it. Declare your uncertainty principle, you guys are going to get it, and then after that is all over, if you get it, you can make a bracha for Arvin B'Samen. But again, I want to reiterate, you don't have to smell B'Samen. People sometimes, they mix up things. What you have to do, they don't really have to do. You don't have to do anything you have to do. So you don't really have to do this at all. nice idea, we do it, but not an absolute must. Any questions? Very good. So these are the halachas of Kiddush and halachas of Avdol. Incidental to the whole this, we already discussed the basics of the mitzvah of Shalosh Sudas B'Shabbos. It all got tied in so closely to Kiddush of Makom Suda, to the issue of Chatzos before and after. But let's just mention a few more points concerning the Suda Shabbos, which perhaps you did not touch upon. One, the requirement what we call Lechem Mishnah. What is Lechem Mishnah? Lechem Mishnah is two whole loaves. I define a whole loaf, that's not so simple. It should be something which is not broken at all, a complete loaf. If it's something breaks off of it, it's not really called Lechem Mishnah. It's not called Shalit. Not a crust loaf.
What
about a bagel? A bagel, which is a complete unit, should count for Lechem Mishnah. I should add, that there exists a chumrah that on Shabbos a person should only eat what we call Pas Yisrael, as opposed to Pas Akum. Have you heard Pas Akum? A non-Jewish bread. Now that's a chumrah for a number of reasons. Some say there's no real source for this whole thing, and some say that our factories today, it's better than the old Pas Akum, and then they used to know the bacon, now we don't even know the bacon. There are grounds to be lenient, but you should be aware that some say it's preferred to stay away from bagels, which may be Pas Akum, on Shabbos. Again, I'm not saying it definitively, but there are a number of reasons why we want to be lenient. But there is still some doubt. Now, if a person does not have two whole loaves, interesting Pas Akum limited, take two half loaves, that's all. They only have two half loaves left. You can't have left a Mishnah, it's only not a full loaf. Not true, since you have two half loaves. The Mishnah can have two halves. It's not shalim, alright? Not perfect, not ideal. But it's better to have two halves than to have one half. That's what he says.
Should we take one and cut in half?
That's not, he says. Take one and cut in half is no good for a number of reasons, which I'm not going to go into now. But that's no good. Yes? Oh, that applies. The entire Shabbos. What? Stella Doro. Alright, that kind of cookie, which is not Pas Yisrael. For the Nischumra, one can make a case not to eat it on Shabbos. I can make a couple of counter cases. I think they're pretty cogent. But some have the custom not to eat these things on Shabbos. Yeah.
Could you use a whole loaf and a half?
No. Best thing is two whole loaves. Next best thing is a whole and a half. Next best thing is two halves. No, that's it. You're not supposed to cut it in half. That was measured before. No. Yes?
If you don't have anything, you only have bread, then should you take two slices of bread?
Yeah. Two slices of bread. Yeah.
What
if,
like, when you bake
the flour? Yeah, they bake into each other and it gets an egg. It's full of. That's awesome. The assumption is that that's okay. So we'll show exactly why. We can say that to be shalom. Lack of an alternative or something. That's considered to be alright. The second loaf that you're not using now does not have to be immediately edible. For example, we sometimes find a frozen challah. You go, oh, I have no challah. It's frozen. Okay, you may break your teeth. Doesn't matter. If you don't break your teeth, you have the other one. That's just sort of the understudy. That's just the extra one. Or sometimes we use a box of matzahs. The box is sealed, and it's a question we'll see later. Did I open the box or not? No. Again, the post in my mail, I'll lead you to use that box of matches for
real.
Yeah, the bag. Yeah. Not in the freezer, the bag in front of you.
So, can you have the two right now? Or shouldn't you? When you have two collars, they both need a bag. And you know you're just going to use one, and you need the other.
I think you leave it in the bag, yeah. I think so.
What
about
top and bottom?
Top and bottom, that's a very good question. The custom is, Friday night we slice the bottom, Shabbos we slice the top. And in order to be sure not to skip a mitzvah, the post will say, on Friday night you keep the bottom closer to you, and Shabbos you leave the top one closer to you.
The
bottom one, you should put it closer to you. And Shabbos, the top one, which is automatically close to you, even if you're at the same level.
What's the
meaning? It's al pi kabbalah. I can't give it to you.
Shabbos doesn't matter?
Well, should it, I don't know what the Kabbalah says. I don't know exactly. Real Kabbalah, by the way, the man who slides both. Both. Slides both. Both. Loaves every meal. And the truth is, I take that back, it's not Kabbalah. The Vilna Gaon says that way. Maybe it's anti-Kabbalah. I'll tell you where it comes from. There is a Gemara Brochus who said that one of the Amoraim came to Shabbos, so it was Botza Akule Sheruso. He sliced the entire loaf. What does that mean? So the Gra understands it to mean he sliced the entire loaf, means all the loaves. So even though the two loaves, you have 30 loaves, slice both. Others say no. It means he sliced a big piece off. Usually he says give it a little piece, see a child give it a bigger piece. Because most of us don't slice both at the same time. It's an interesting thing. There is a Kabbalistic notion that you may have seen in your life or heard about in Tzemiris of 12 chalas. Yeah. Have you heard of it?
People bake 12 little.
In some of the Tzemiris, it says, the Ari's Tzemiris says, betray Saname, 12 loaves. So the Vilna Gaon says it's simply a mistake. He wasn't very big on some of these Kabbalistic. What's the mistake? Well, Kabbalists, no. It said, the Gra claims, that's what they say, that it said in the original source, Yud Beis Ches. And it was interpreted to mean, Yud Beis Chalas. 12 Chalas. Mistake. It should be, Yud Beis Chatzoin. 12 halves. Why 12 halves? Friday night, sliced both Chalas, boom. You have four halves, right? Shabbos morning, slice both chalas, boom, another four halves. Shabbos Shus, slice both chalas, boom, another four halves. Another 12 halves. That's what the Gaon once said, that it's all based on mistakes. Again, I don't want to get involved in this kind of thing. I'm not going to use all these controversies. You do whatever the custom is in your house. All right. The preferred way for Lecha Mishnah, I didn't mention this last week, that the one person makes a moti on the two chalas, then cuts and passes around, and everyone else answers Amen, and then it's quiet until the piece of challah gets to you, and then you eat it based upon the bracha of the person who made the original bracha. Don't make your own bracha for the Lech Mishnah on Shabbos.
You have to wait until he's eaten first,
then? You should wait until he eats first. Question whether that's an absolute requirement or it's merely etiquette. And it is also important, Derech Eretz is Kamal HaTorah, Kamal HaShavan Aruch, because Derech Eretz. You should wait for that person eats, and then you can eat your piece. Yes? Salt. Well, again, Kabbalah gets mixed in. If you discount Kabbalah, there's no need for salt in our challahs for a simple reason. They have salt. They have salt. Matzah, maybe different. Challah has salt already. But according to Kabbalah, supposed to have salt on the table, and then on the spam, and you're supposed to dip it into the salt, supposed to salt it from the top. So those who follow that custom should do so. Otherwise, no need for salt unless it's either matzah or non-salt challah. I don't know about any meaning, but it seems to me that keep it up is a mitzvah of the Torah. I wouldn't want some kind of minute to go against the mitzvah of the Torah. So honoring your father, your mother, your grandfather, your grandmother, sounds to me would be an overriding consideration. It is a minute of an aruch in general, not to pass bread hand to hand. That's what's quoted by a bailiff. Actually, we should just put it in a basket and pass the basket around. But there are many places where I've seen this minute ignored the breach. I guess it's just not, hasn't been caught on in those circles. So in most cases tomorrow. Don't make an issue of it. But better if you want to cut the cover in a basket or a tray, pass the tray around and it takes. You want to give it to pass your mother first. That's a great idea.
Guests?
There's no mitzvah in the Torah to honor guests.
Is
Could be, it's better to take first, right? Could be. Depends on the context. We used to get a lot. We don't have a seat again. Yes? Dispute. Some say that since no one permitted to eat before you anyway, what's the purpose of your cutting for other people? You're wasting your time. Better to eat first, then cut for everybody else. However, it seems to me that that may cause an extra delay. In other words, just logistically, if you cut for yourself and then put down the knife and start eating, and then pick it up again and start cutting all over again, and then for the, you'll decrease your break between hamotzi and eating bread, but you're increasing their break. So you're a tzaddik, what we call in Yiddish, avyenim schezmi. On his schezmi, he's going to take him a much longer amount of time. It seems to me that those who cut everything first and then take the first piece for themselves and then pass is also a basis for that. But to pass it around before you take the first piece makes no sense because they can't eat before you. So that's again, either you cut everything first, take the first piece, and then pass it to save them time, or the other meaning of the Taz, so you cut for yourself, take a bite, and then cut the rest. They're both, I think, accepted. Yes. So what can you do? Wait it out. Well, you know, sometimes what we do is we give all our guests lecha mishnah. You know, we run one to the balabas, bus. We do in our sukkah. So that's possible. So every balabas has his own lecha, whoever comes, all the guests, everyone has his own lecha mishnah. Oh, kids have their own lecha, everyone has their own lecha, it's exciting. You give two matzahs to everybody, a whole box of matzahs to everyone else. And then at the end, I come and I cut the challah for everybody. That's how we usually do it. Nothing wrong with that. Is a custom of making a scratch or a cut in the challah. Come on, that should be able to have a mouth. It's hard to impose upon you to eat so much, you know. Some say you say it's a shame, it's not a mouth. Some must be supposed to be a school for an even childbirth. I don't give any guarantees. What if the Rebbe of Elamela from the Vince? This little bone in the spine, whatever that means. I don't know exactly what it means. So it's a good idea to can't hurt to have a lot of bones. If you got a diet, maybe you can't hurt, but it's really serious. Okay, we'll call it quits for this evening. Finish up next week. So, I would tell you.